Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, January 8, 2018. President Salva Kiir's spokesman says former Army Chief Paul Malong has rebelled.
Malong is no longer the Chief of Staff of the Army. Malong is former Chief of Staff of the Army. But in accordance to the tape, he's a rebel. According to the tape.
And another church leader from Amadi State says the South Sudan Army is looting and burning villages in former Western Equatorial State.
Since November 4, 2017, the government of South Sudan intensified military operations in the areas of Bahari, Geria, Bangulo, Kotobi, Karika, Lozo, Lee, and this has resulted to displacement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government is accusing former Army Chief of Staff General Paul Malong of rebelling against the Kiir administration. Presidential spokesman Wek Ateng says Mr. Kiir's office has evidence that Malong recently gave directives to army officers loyal to him on how to attack and topple the government. Wek Ateng called a news conference in Juba today to present what he calls clear evidence that Malong has rebelled against the government in Juba. He told reporters the government has obtained a tape in which Malong was instructing military officers on how to topple the Kiir administration. Ateng alleges that Malong ordered an army officer named Captain Bang Bak, who is attached to military intelligence in Wau, to start fighting government forces in Wau and capture Wau airport. Ateng also says Malong was instructing people in the tape, saying that a colonel called Garang Chang to attack Juba.
Malong is no longer the Chief of Staff of the Army. Malong is former Chief of Staff of the Army. But in accordance to the tape, he's a rebel.
Ateng says Malong has been speaking to both officers serving in the government and the army and those who have already defected to rebel leaders. He says some of the military officers Malong has been in touch with are part of an armed group led by Abdel Baghi, who operates in parts of the greater Bahr al-Ghazal area.
As the leaked audio tape of General Malong was already a declassified material and therefore a public document, we took measures to verify it. And so we can confirm without reservation that the audio has borne the true voice of General Paul Malong, the former chief of General Staff of the
SPLA. A dispute between Malong and the government started last year in May when President Salva Kiir sacked him as Army Chief of Staff and placed him under house arrest in Juba. Following mediation efforts by community leaders, President Kiir released Malong 6 months later and allowed him to travel to Kenya to seek medical attention. While Ateng confirms the government treated Malong's alleged rebel activities as a threat to national security, he says Juba has yet to take strong measures to deal with the former army chief.
The government at a larger scale, and particularly in what is called the Security Council, will come with appropriate response. As I am not competent to speak about what measures the government should take, in as much as the issue of Malong is concerned. The Security Council will be the one to decide.
The U.S. government imposed sanctions on Malong and two other senior government officials in September last year for their role in orchestrating the country's four-year conflict. The U.S. Treasury Department of Foreign Assets Control says it believes Malong played a key role in prolonging the conflict, which has left thousands of people dead and forced millions to flee their homes. Waki Simon Wudu prepared this report from Juba. South Sudan in Focus made repeated calls to Paul Malong's bodyguard, Makwach Lual, and he told this program that Paul Malong was resting and that we should call at a later time. A church leader from Amadi State is vocal about the dire situation in South Sudan. An Anglican priest from Amadi State says the South Sudan Army is on rampage, killing and looting property in several villages in Amadi State. Reverend Wesley Natana says civilians are taking cover from the South Sudan Army in remote parts of villages across Amadi State. Natana is appealing to President Salva Kiir to respect the cessation of hostility agreement and order the South Sudan Army to stop fighting rebels of the SPLM-IO in Amadi State.
Since November 4, 2017, the government of South Sudan intensified military operations in the areas of Bahari, Geria, Bangulo, Kotobi, Karika, Lozu, Lee, and this has resulted to displacement of the entire population from Bahari, and many of my people have been killed. As I speak now, my elder brother, Gideon Matana, went missing on 24th November and has not been found. I believe he has been killed by the military.
Reverend Natana, I just want to pose the question here. Given the logistical challenges and communication challenges in South Sudan, you've mentioned a lot of areas. Have you been to all these areas to verify accusations that you are leveling against the government?
I haven't been there, but I'm some of the area. So I get information every day, 2, 3, 4 times a day. What I'm saying are all truth. As you speak to my people in the villages, they're in the bush. The government at Bari has deployed a big military there. This evening, the governor himself went and provided more military logistics. He has given 2 weeks for the people to report back to their houses, or else they will be brought home by force. And at the same time, the houses are looted.
Who is looting the houses? You are saying people's houses have been looted. Who is looting these houses?
The South Sudan government army. Even my own house, they are all burnt down. And this is being done by the government of South Sudan army under the instructions of the governor, who happens to be a brigadier in the army. And the chairman of the security, in addition to his powers as a governor.
Are there any non-governmental organizations in the areas that you are mentioning?
The government does not allow the humanitarian NGOs to go to these areas because they are fighting IOs in those areas. And at the same time, if the humanitarian NGOs go, whatever they give, they will give to the army because the civilians are now in the bush.
The governor, Joseph Ngere, is a son of the area, and I'm sure you interact with him and other elders in the area interact with him. Have you sat down to tell him that the army is displacing people and looting properties in the area?
But the governor has changed his side immediately after the time he was shot. Remember, he was shot in wounded there. So his attitude changed after he was shot. He strongly believes that he was
shot. Who shot him? Who shot him? I mean, I don't understand.
He's an unknown gunman, but he believes that he was shot by people of Mundi. So he has developed an attitude of hostility against his own people.
What is the church doing, the Episcopal Church of South Sudan? What is it doing to address these issues? Because last week I was just speaking to the Archbishop of the Internal Province of Central Equatoria, who was talking about rape cases in Aru Junction. Today you are talking about the South Sudan Army looting and killing people at will in Amadi State. What is the church doing about this?
The church has been being directed to talk to the governor, but the governor has taken a position of not listening to the church. And he has gone to the level of intimidating church leaders in Amadi State. So the church cannot speak the way I'm speaking from Mundi, because the church leaders are afraid of their lives.
Have you made any attempt to address these issues with the government in Juba? If the governor in the state is not listening and is threatening people, have you made any attempts to speak to President Salva Kiir about these issues?
Some of our elders have gone to the president and reported these things to him. But I think the president is not getting the right information or listening to the right people.
But his legal advisor, his legal advisor, Lawrence Kurbandi, is the son of the area in these places where you're mentioning. Have you spoken to Lawrence Kurbandi to speak to the president about these issues?
Lawrence Kurbandi is aware of these issues, and he has been trying his best to talk to the president about it, but I don't know the outcome. But all the things I'm reporting to you, Kurbandi is aware, and he's not happy about it. He wants these atrocities to be stopped with immediate effect, but he doesn't have executive powers. The executive powers are with the governor and the Division 6 commander.
And how about the members of parliament? How about the members of parliament in the transitional government of national unity who come from the areas that you are mentioning? Are they existing? Are they doing their work? They are supposed to petition the governor and petition the minister of security in South Sudan about these issues.
You see, John, these days in Juba, the MPs, whatever they say, they are not listened to. The people who are listened to are the military and the governors. These are the people the president listens to.
That's Reverend Wesley Natana of the Luy Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan. He was speaking to me from Nairobi earlier today. Last week, the Archbishop of the Internal Province of Central Equatoria, Paul Yugusuk, told this program that a member of South Sudan Army raped a pregnant woman at Aru Junction on the Juba-Nimule Highway. Founders of a South Sudanese non-governmental organization operating refugee settlements in northern Uganda say they are implementing a technology-based approach to solve some of the problems facing their fellow South Sudanese refugees and improve their lives. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
The head of a group of South Sudanese refugees at the Rhino settlement in Arua says the group is using information and communications technology to transform the lives of fellow refugees. Peter Batali, co-founder of the Community Empowerment Technology Network, or C10, says the organization began in July 2016 out of a mud house on a residential plot in Rhino.
We started offering free services to our own selves. You know, we could charge, run a generator and charge my phone, and when they hear the sound of the generator, they come out with their DVD players, torches, they come out with laptops, which surprised us.
Batali says later he and his colleagues developed training courses for refugees in basic computer. Ugandan Adoma Christopher, the official in charge of CTEM's ICT program, says the organization did not have any computers, but some refugees who fled to Uganda with their devices agreed to loan them to CTEM.
Some of them were kind enough to bring those computers out of their homes so that the rest of the community could use them during the basic training processes, yes.
Batali says last October, the UNHCR's innovation team in Geneva visited CTEN's office and donated mobile internet devices, which the organization used to provide its first free wireless internet service to refugees at Rhino Camp. Refugees used social media platforms to communicate with relatives and friends and follow news and developments about South Sudan. Claudina Nangitere, a senior secondary school student, says she and other refugee students used the service to help prepare for their classes.
When the topic we have not yet covered, I can go through internet, I checked for the notes, then I will. They are ahead of the rest of the students at school.
In one case, Batali says the network was also able to save an elderly man's life. He says the man had no money to pay his hospital bills, but after CTEN posted his story and photo on its Facebook page, he connected with his son in Northern Ireland who came to the rescue. In September last year, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, officially signed CTEN as a partner to implement its mass information awareness and mobilization programs in three large settlements in the West Nile region. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Arua.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN condemns the latest crackdown on protesters in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes a relationship strong?
The only thing is trusting one another. When you trust someone, you will not think negative of your partner.
Communication. The moment you communicate, everything is going to be sorted. Because most marriages always break out because of little communication among the spouses.
Trust and faith. When, for example, if I'm in a relationship, I would suggest, it's important for your partner to trust you and have faith in you.
Relationship can be strong when you understand yourself, you have unity and you work together, and you also have common activities you do together so that you can share the relationship. The relationship will be stronger.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The UN Human Rights Office has condemned the violent response by the government security forces in the Democratic Republic of Congo on people who are calling on President Joseph Kabila to resign. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the Rights Office in Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office says at least 5 people were killed, 92 injured, and around 180 arrested during recent protests in the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa, and a number of other cities. Most of those arrested since have been released, but the UN expresses alarm at the brutal action of the security forces that allegedly fired live ammunition, rubber bullets, and tear gas grenades, in some cases at point-blank range. Human rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell says the casualty figures from the demonstrations on December 31st probably are higher than reported.
Our colleagues on the ground were denied access to morgues, hospitals, and detention centers. They were also sent away from these sites by defense and security forces, and so were unable to fully conduct their human rights monitoring work. Security forces are also reported to have fired tear gas inside churches, stopped people attending religious services, and stolen their personal property. This is an alarming development that impinges on freedom of religion or belief.
The government and opposition signed an agreement on December 31, 2016, stating that Kabila would step down as president when elections were held before the end of 2017. That timeline has come and gone, and the president remains in power, provoking the recent deadly demonstrations. The UN Rights Office is calling for credible and independent investigations into the alleged use of excessive force and to bring those responsible for human rights violations to justice. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Cameroon, where there have been diverse reactions in Cameroon after the arrest in Nigeria of 9 separatist leaders who declared independence of the English-speaking regions of the Central African state and gave it a name, Ambazonia. Some English speakers oppose the arrest, while other Cameroonians are celebrating what might be an end to a year-long crisis. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Boya, southern Cameroon.
Hundreds of children at the bilingual high school in Moliko have defied calls to stay at home and have returned to school for the start of the second term of Cameroon's school year. Among them is 16-year-old Glory Mbui, who says her father forced her to come to school in spite of threats from the armed separatists.
I'm afraid because they're having supporters that might continue the disorder in the country. I'm equally afraid because I'm armed with Chinese soldiers that might equally continue the killing of people in the country.
The call for all children to stay at home was reiterated by the separatists after Ayuk Tabe Julius, the man they call the president of the independent state of Ambazonia, was arrested alongside 8 members of his interim government in Abuja, Nigeria, on Friday. Businessman Evaristus Njie says he supports the separatists because English-speaking Cameroonians are marginalized. He says Nigeria and Cameroon should free the arrested leaders.
The government has been claiming that they are dialoguing with them. How can they claim that they are dialoguing with them for the peace to return? Why at the same time they arrest them? It's not good. Free the Ambazonian leaders and dialogue with them for the peace to return in the country.
The unrest in Cameroon began in November when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets calling for reforms and greater autonomy. In October, secessionist groups declared the independence of Ambazonia and armed conflict erupted, prompting a crackdown by the military. The UN has said the violence pushed at least 7,500 English-speaking Cameroonians to flee to Nigeria. Last month, Cameroon's Defense Minister, Joseph Beti Asomu, visited deserted towns in the border regions and called on the population that fled to return.
The inhabitants of some of those villages has closed the border to go to Nigeria, and I want them to come back to their villages and retake their activities, their normal activities, since security has already been re-established in all these villages.
Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Boya, Cameroon.
Two former Zimbabwean cabinet ministers who were loyal to ousted President Robert Mugabe appeared in court Saturday on corruption charges. But as Sebastian Mwofu reports from Harare, their lawyers say the charges are pure victimization targeting those who were against President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who replaced Mugabe.
Former Foreign Affairs Minister Walter Muzembi and former Energy Minister Samuel Udenge were arrested Friday and appeared in court Saturday, where they were released on bail. Job Sikala, the lawyer for Muzembi, spoke to reporters after court proceedings.
The charges that my client is facing are really ridiculous charges. These are charges whereby they are saying that he donated to churches some television screens, those that were used during the World Cup period. They are saying that they were supposed to having been rotten at the ministry. Secondly, also in terms of the charge, they are saying that the donation should have been done in consistency of his role and duties. But at that material time, I understand that my client innovated a new concept of religious tourism, the one that he was trying to promote around our local prophets, to which the inconsistency of his duties cannot be found out of such an allegation. So we are waiting on the 22nd when we are going to make an application for exception to the charge.
The duo joins former Finance Minister Ignatius Chombo and former Mines Minister Walter Chidakwa and several other senior officials who are out on bail on corruption-related charges. Some of their lawyers told VOA last month that their court crime and court was supporting former First Lady Grace Mugabe to take over from her husband, who gave in to military pressure and resigned last November. President Emmerson Mnangagwa replaced the 93-year-old. Mugabe had fired Mnangagwa as the country's vice president, accusing him of dishonesty and disloyalty. On Saturday, the Minister of Home Affairs, Obet Mpofu, said the arrest had nothing to do with politics.
No, that's an operational issue. I cannot comment on that.
That's Mpofu, under whose ministry Zimbabwe police fall, said before hanging up his phone. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The Kiir administration accuses former Army Chief of Staff General Paul Malong of trying to stage a revolt against the government. Presidential spokesman Atenny Wekatenny says Mr. Kiir's office has evidence that Malong recently instructed Army officers loyal to him on strategy for attacking and toppling the government. Atenny told reporters in Juba today that there is clear evidence evidence that Malong has rebelled against the government in Juba, saying Malong ordered an army officer who is attached to military intelligence in Wau to begin fighting and to capture Wau Airport. Tenney also says Malong was recorded instructing another military officer to attack Juba. He says some military officers Malong has been in touch with are part of an armed group led by Abdel Baghi, who operates in parts of the greater Bahar el-Ghazal region. A dispute erupted between Malong and the government last May when President Salva Kiir fired Malong as Army Chief of Staff and placed him under house arrest in Juba. Church leaders in South Sudan are becoming increasingly outspoken about the dire situation across the country. An Anglican priest from Amadi State says the South Sudan army is on a rampage and killing and looting property in several villages across the state. Reverend Wesley Natana says civilians are taking cover from the army in remote parts of villages across Amadi. Natana is urging President Kiir to respect the cessation of hostilities agreement and order the South Sudan army to stop fighting rebels of the SPLM-IO. Last week, the Archbishop of the Internal Province of Central Equatoria, Paul Yagusik, told this program that a member of the South Sudan Army raped a pregnant woman at Aru Junction on the Juba-Nimale Highway. And finally, founders of a South Sudanese non-governmental organization operating in refugee settlements in northern Uganda say they are implementing a technology-based approach to solve some of the problems facing their fellow South Sudanese refugees and to improve their lives. The head of a group of South Sudanese refugees at the Rhino settlement in Arua says the group is using information and communications technology to transform the lives of fellow refugees. Peter Batali, who is co-founder of the Community Empowerment Technology Network, or CTEN, says the organization began in July of 2016 out of a mud house on a residential plot in Rhino, but is now working with the UNHCR to help refugees get in touch with relatives and friends on the internet. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Anader Salam by I Am Peace Ambassadors.
Yeah. We're singing for peace.
It doesn't matter which color.
I am peace. You are peace. We are peace.
All we need is four hands.
There's no sense of living without a neighbor. When we deserve them, there's no sense of hating one another. Based on our tribes, they're on Turkey. They are beside the waiter. Matata kilamo, Mosada, Makasano, Gabila, Daki.
Madrupidin yado sinjo within you know this time Madrupin yabetawa and recall yoko bore colour my wa. Let's learn to forgive and live in peace and harbor. Doesn't matter where you came from, what tribe or race, politicians, politicking, trying to cause separation. Just sick and tired of this wars that you're creating. Innocent lives lost every day and night. Children left helpless. What kind of life are we leading? Yeah, let's preach peace.
Alleluia.
We have been listening to I Am Peace Ambassadors with their song Anader Salam, which means I want peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. I would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at SouthSudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.